When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
With me, Ben Hobson.
And me, Jane Maguire.
Today we're talking with ultra runner Sophie Power about the importance of staying active while pregnant. Some good news, guys. Racing is back on the calendar. My South Downs Way 50 in April is going to happen. You didn't think it would, Jane, but it is.
I like completely take back everything I said.
Yeah, so it's on the 17th of April, so it's going to be on the 10th. It's now on the 17th. And I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, I think the longest run I'm going to do, realistically though, is probably about 25 miles. So I'll do half the distance and then just cross my fingers and think, presumably it'll be okay.
Mate, you'll be fine. This is easy for you. As a man of your ultra caliber, you'll be fine. As long as you don't do some sort of rogue nutrition strategy, which you're famed for.
Rick, can you tell the listeners my favourite story you've ever told me is when you did a marathon eating sweet potato, and I want you to tell the listeners this story.
Right, so this is a nutrition faux pas, I'm going to call it. So I went through a bit of a weird phase. I think a lot of people do this with nutrition, where they just become very experimental. And I was like, this is about 5 years ago. 5 or 6 years ago, and I was like, oh, I don't need gels. I never take gels on long runs. What I need is like some slow release energy. And I think I'd heard somebody in the trail ultra world talking about sweet potato as being this good, you know, mid race fuel, because it's this great slow release carb. So it was a London marathon. So I'm running along in the London marathon, and the night before I'd slightly overcooked a sweet potato. I put it in some tin foil, and I
thought,
amazing, this is gonna be me. No Lucozade, no gels, I'll be running on sweet potato. And about sort of 3 miles in, I tried to open this little tin foil parcel, which is really difficult to open. It's really hard to get out of the pocket. It started to turn to mush. I mean, at that point
in your pocket is my favorite.
You must have been like just stuffing it in your face with this foil.
And then I was getting like some tin foil came off, so I was kind of eating some tin foil. the whole thing was terrible. I think I ended up throwing it away and completely ran out of energy about the 20 mile mark. So, I have learned since then, and I'm much more orthodox now.
I like that you went for sweet potato, not banana, or something that, you know, is a classic.
yeah, you're right. There's, even if you're going to go natural, there are more obvious choices than the sort of root vegetable. Yeah, well, the thing, apparently bananas, I mean, like, bananas are giving you everything you need, actually. It's just the weight of a banana, right? So, like,
you're carrying a potato.
You're right. There's no way that this is a good story. I will never come out of this looking good. But yeah, I've started using that Morton stuff, so I've gone the complete opposite way, you know, which is like the sort of fuel of the future, and it's actually really good. I should
surprisingly
have done
good. Imagine that.
Yeah. Who knew?
There must be so many people listening that have really good nutrition fails. Can you please send them in, because they're my ultimate favorite thing, and anyone who's eaten sweet potato needs to join Rick in that.
People will be listening to this at any old time in the future, but we are recording on International Women's Day, so happy International Women's Day, everyone. I think, you know, just for a retrospective look back at our Instagram page, you can go and have a quick look.
Yeah, if you've not seen it, go on the Runner's World Instagram and have a look. We've kind of documented the history of women's running on there. And I think I was really shocked at how recent some of the dates are. We're not talking like hundreds and hundreds of years ago. We're talking, you know, women weren't allowed to run in races, you know, not that long ago. So if you haven't seen the picture, there's some really good pictures, and yeah, go and have a look.
Off the back of it as well, it kind of made us think about, we've been doing some work on a survey about harassment with running. It's a topic we visited in 2017, and with the resurgence of running during lockdown, we kind of wanted to look with more people running, like, has harassment of runners, in particular female runners, has it increased with lockdown? And yeah, worryingly so, the results would say so. But I mean, it's shocking, actually. We've had sort of thousands of responses, and people have written some of their experiences, and we've had 600 accounts of,
wow,
not just verbal abuse, but actual assault and sort of physical violence towards female runners. And today being International Women's Day, it's very pertinent that we continue to give a bit of airtime to that conversation, because the results were just absolutely mind-blowing, to be honest.
It's overwhelming, but it shows that it's happening everywhere and it's not okay. And I think we will do our best to delve in and address the issue. But I think that's important on International Women's Day, to not just look at how far we have come far. You know, women weren't allowed to run at one point, and in certain parts of the world women still aren't allowed to run, but we've also got a way to go until I think we're treated equally in the running world and in the world outside of running. So yeah,
I agree. I think as a bloke, it's quite easy to think that, you know, to feel, you know, like you can run anywhere and at any time, and actually I think it shows that the female experience just isn't that, you know, that there are so many things that unfortunately women have to bear in mind when they go out running. And yeah, the sheer number of incidents and accounts that we've got is just testament to that, isn't it? And hopefully that can start to change. But it does feel like slow progress. I mean, we've still got stuff, and this is different, I guess, but it's, you know, the kind of the run equal stuff across country, men and women running different distances. And that's still hanging around, you know, and it's kind of it's a much more difficult thing to change than logic would suggest that it should be. So that there are still these inequalities in running that that we need to change, I think.
Definitely.
Oh, we also got a letter from a listener, and it's about cadence, and it's from Lisa, and she says, I was wondering if you could feature a discussion about cadence. I don't really understand it, but often check my watch and what it says. I'm really enjoying my long runs at the moment, and wonder if it's because I'm concentrating more on a smaller, quicker steps. Did a 10-mile run, and her watch told her she was between 175 to 185 cadence. Wondering if that is good. So I'm going to give you my quick masterclass on cadence. I say masterclass, I use that word very, very loosely. So cadence is the number of steps you take per minute when you run. And research has suggested that 180 is a kind of gold standard of cadence. That's what you should be going for. I think realistically, anywhere between 170 to 190, and probably 190 for the smaller runner, and 170 for the kind of taller runner. Anywhere between that is looked at as a pretty good, efficient cadence. Why you want to have a cadence in and around there is that a quick cadence reduces things like ground contact time and the chance of overstriding, both of which could potentially lead to running injuries. And if you really want to get into cadence, you can download a metronome app to your phone.
Wow.
I would suggest wearing headphones when you do that. Otherwise, you really will irritate anyone that you're running. True.
You're going to really annoy yourself as well, to be honest, because it's just listening to a tick. Just listening to a ticking noise while running along will inevitably drive you completely insane.
Ben, I think we had a chat, didn't we, about this? Because I'm, for no one can see me, but I'm like, I say 5'2", more like 5'1". And my cadence is really high because I'm small, whereas your cadence is much lower. So it's like, I think if you looked at my Garmin, you'd be like, wow, she's an amazing runner. And I'm definitely not, I'm just short. So I wouldn't pin all your hopes on cadence.
Yeah, I think you can obsess certainly about the 180 number too much, because I think it's just a kind of general guideline.
I think if you put on your running watch and you've got the ability to find your cadence through that, or your heart rate monitor and all these different things that can kind of give you you can count, but you know, these things will do it for you. And if it's anywhere near like the 150 mark, then you should probably try and work on just getting a bit faster, because like 150 is quite slow.
Yeah.
For me to be consistently at 180, I kind of have to actively shorten my stride length, which isn't, again, necessarily the best thing, because I'm quite tall. So, and if you're trying to run at like an easy run or something like that, and you're trying to keep a really super high cadence, it's just exhausting. So it's sort of, your kind of leg speed becomes, you kind of look a little bit like a cartoon man, I think. Like your sort of legs are sort of desperately spinning underneath a very slow moving body. Yeah, it is a good thing to try and master, just so that you can avoid lots of extra strain through the joints and the muscles.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully that helps, Lisa. But it sounds like you're doing everything right. Anyway, 175 to 185 on your watch. That's you're right in the kind of the good cadence zone.
Right. That's enough of this cadence chat. Let's get our guest of the week on.
Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete. Could be a physio. Or a complete unknown.
This week on the podcast, we're talking to the incredible ultra runner, Sophie Power, who some of you might know from the photo that went viral a few years ago of her breastfeeding her 3-month-old son at the 106-mile UTMB race. As Sophie returns to running after the birth of her third child, we talk about the benefits of an active pregnancy and the pelvic floor issues all women should be aware of. Welcome to the Run of the World podcast, Sophie. Thanks so much for coming on. Let's start off by talking about pregnancy. How important was running for you during your third pregnancy?
Running was so important to me. I was really, really lucky in that I was able to run until the day my waters broke, which wasn't the case in my first and second pregnancies, where I stopped at, I think, 7.5 months and then 5 months. I fell pregnant as we went into the first lockdown. So I found myself kind of first trimester, absolutely knackered with a 1 and a 5-year-old on my hands and trying to work at the same time. So running was just the best way to get out of the house on my own, escape everything and clear my head. So I was so lucky that it was a way I could keep my fitness up during pregnancy, but also probably more importantly, just get away from things and have a bit of time to myself.
Yeah, for sure.
I think we can all relate.
Yeah. What do you think the biggest misconceptions about running and exercising while pregnant are? Because, you know, it always ends up being a topic, which in itself is a sort of statement of how sort of, I guess, not absorbed into the norm as it should be.
Yeah, I mean, there's so little research on kind of pregnant women being active, because you can't really do trials where anything could hurt a baby. So the default has been for years, like, don't do, and everything is a risk. Don't exercise, it's a risk. But we actually now know that exercise in pregnancy benefits the mother, but actually also the baby. The baby's kind of come out fitter in a way. And the government guidelines on exercise in pregnancy were only released 18 months ago, which says that kind of 150 minutes of moderate intensity every week and at least 2 strength sessions. But for runners, we're not the norm. We're more active than the average person. And it really is a case of saying, if you were doing something before, you can keep doing it as long as your body feels right. It feels right for your body. Don't get really out of breath, but your body doesn't really let you. Mine kind of told me when it was going too far, don't get too hot, keep hydrated. But if you're a runner and you're active before pregnancy, we now know that is really safe to continue through pregnancy. The guidelines are quite new and a lot of the people working in the medical profession are still catching up. So a lot of people are going to go back to what people said kind of 10 years ago, but we now know it's actually the best thing for us for kind of physical health. But as I said, kind of for the mental health, just having that time to yourself to escape things.
I'm wondering, Sophie, because you're a great runner. You've done lots of the big showcase ultra marathons, including the UTMB. But how did you adapt your training during pregnancy? Or was it something where your body kind of regulated it for you? It let you know how much it wanted to do?
It does kind of regulate it in some way. It definitely kind of straight away, one of the first kind of times I knew I was pregnant, I was like, my body just feels like it doesn't want to push things. I look at my heart rate and it got to 160. It was like, no, I'm kind of done there. So I was really listening to that and I was looking a lot on my heart rate. So I wore my heart rate belt kind of all the time while exercising and made sure I wasn't kind of doing too much. But I think the big thing was on impact. So kind of you're suddenly changing shape and you're putting this impact on your pelvis and trying to reduce that. So part of that was through training. So I started running softer trail. I started doing an incline on the treadmill, which really kind of running up a hill is much less impact than the downhill. Switching to the most cushioned shoes kind of I could find. So kind of replacing all my kind of anything remotely barefoot with kind of the Hoka Cliftons, a really super cushioned road shoes, super cushioned trail shoes. Then it was getting on the bike for some of the harder sessions. So where I couldn't push myself running outside because I was so worried about the impact, I got on my husband's one of those Zwift people. So we have I don't get Zwift. He's trying to get me on it, but we've got a watt bike. So I got on the watt bike. And then I switched to hiking on the treadmill for a lot of my miles. And I think runners often say, you know, you've got to run. I'm a runner. I've got to run. But you can have an amazing workout hiking an incline. Like I can get my heart rate higher on an incline hike than I can do kind of sprinting on a treadmill. So kind of really just saying kind of, what do I need out of running? And yes, I needed to go outside, but the fitness side, I could actually do by a lot of cross training and doing lots of different things. So it was always kind of working with my coach, kind of Edwina Sutton, who was kind of a mum of three. So she knew what I needed, what my body needed, and just putting that plan together to get me to kind of the other side of pregnancy in the best shape possible.
And you mentioned that you fell pregnant at the beginning of lockdown. I think there was a real... At that beginning point of lockdown, there was this real anxiety that we all felt about just going outside. And it all seemed a bit unclear for pregnant women. Should you stay in? Should you go out? Like there wasn't enough information. Did you feel worried about going out for running, being pregnant in a lockdown, in a pandemic?
No, I think I realised that I needed to do it more than ever. And I had the boys with me. So having kind of two young sons who they needed to get out. Now, we were really lucky we'd moved to the Surrey Hills and we have amazing open spaces where we can hike for hours and not see anyone. All those kind of secret running trails I had kind of before I was pregnant, people are discovering them now because I can see there's more people going down my running trails. I'm like, get off my running trails. But I knew where to take the boys where we could just be outside, be active. And I think that really helped us through the first lockdown because they need their exercise. They were happier. I was happier, but I wasn't worried. I think kind of no one really understands the effect of kind of COVID on pregnant women, but I knew that I could keep them safe outside and being active was the best thing for everyone.
You mentioned that you switched all your shoes out to Hoka and this was before I think that you actually sort of partnered with them. So, you know, there's a real testament there, but you are now part of a larger campaign with those guys. And you've spoken a lot about returning to fitness safely post-birth and you've had some aspirations to run an ultra 11 weeks after giving birth. And there's been a sort of documented on social media that things possibly haven't quite gone to plan. What have you learnt about your body this time round that was sort of different? Or is it not different? It's just that, you know, circumstance and all those sorts of things.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Yeah, so before I gave birth, I came up with the idea of documenting my kind of end of pregnancy running and return to fitness, partly because there's so little information out there. And I knew that I'd struggle before. I really struggled my first pregnancy. I couldn't run a running step for 3 months because my pelvic floor was shot. And then my second pregnancy, I ran UTMB at 3 months. So it was kind of two very different pregnancies. And I thought, let's see if we can just try and show what happens and break down some of these barriers. And Hocker kindly agreed to sponsor the film and help me break down those barriers and bring it to kind of the public. So that was pretty exciting. But no, we didn't know what was going to happen. And yes, my goal was it to be a kind of a UTMB-like return, much kind of lower key, kind of a 50K trail race. But what I found out was at my 6 week check with a female physio, and that's different from a GP check. That's a kind of a proper where, to be honest, they just wanted to check I wasn't going to have another baby anytime soon. And I said, absolutely, I'm done. Three, I'm done. You know, hold me to that. The female physio, proper full pelvic examination. And I realized I had a minor prolapse. Which is what I thought something happened to like 60 plus year old women. But as my physio Emma Brockwell said, actually 50% of women with one baby have signs of it, 85% with two, and I have three. So basically I had no chance of getting away with it, which means that I need a much more gradual return to the impact. I can run, but I can't go out for a 4 hour run yet. I've got to build that up much more slowly and do a lot more strength work. So that's what's happened. So Saoirse is 12 weeks now, and I'm running for an hour. I'm running my friends. I'm doing my quality heart rate training, hiking, and on a bike. And I will get back to ultras. And so now the next focus is going to Lakeland 100 in July. And that's a much more sensible return.
Sensible.
Sensible. I know, Lakeland 100 is sensible.
It's probably one of the hardest ultras in the UK, I would say, Lakeland 100. But yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah, you're very experienced in this stuff. So fair play. I wanted to quickly ask you, Sophie, about because you mentioned the UTMB then. I guess it'll be very familiar to a lot of our listeners, but some people won't be aware of the UTMB and just what a monster of a race it is. And there was a photo of you at one of the aid stations, and you were breastfeeding. I think it was about 70 miles in or something. I mean, could you just...
50
miles in, so about halfway. So could you just give us a very quick reminder of that story? Because I think if anyone's not aware of it, it's super inspiring.
Sure. So UTMB is a 106-mile mountain race around Mont Blanc with about 10,000 meters of climbing. But it's one of the iconic ultra marathons, and it's so difficult to get into. And I'd finally got a place. I had to get points in doing different ultras and then get in the ballot. And I'd had a place when I was pregnant with my first son, 4 years before I did the race, and they wouldn't let me defer it because I was pregnant. They'd let me defer if I was injured. And I lost out on my dream then. And then 4 years later, I had my place, and then I realized I would be kind of pregnant. I would basically have a three-month-old baby on the start line. And I knew this more than a year in advance because you kind of, if you miss out so many years in the ballot, you get an automatic place. So I knew this 18 months in advance. And obviously I hoped to have an older baby, but you don't really kind of get pregnant when you press a button. So three-month baby, my dream race. So my goal was just to be on the start line, just to experience it, knowing that they wouldn't let me defer it. I was going to lose that opportunity. And I trained through pregnancy as if I was going to do that race. So stopped running at 5 months, got on those awful stair mills, those rotating kind of staircases. It was awful. Hiking incline on the treadmill. And then I got back to run hiking really quickly afterwards. And I got to the start line. I was breastfeeding, which is a real problem being without your baby for the kind of 16 hours it took me to get to Courmayeur. My husband brought my baby around the course and a pump around the course, and I was lucky enough to make it to the finish line.
Amazing, yeah.
So, yeah, it's crazy thinking back on it, and I think knowing that every pregnancy is different, that I wouldn't be doing it this time. I could get myself around the course again this time, I'm fairly sure, but it would be really damaging to my body, and having to take a step back has been quite difficult.
It's amazing.
That picture though was it sort of it went way beyond running. I mean, obviously anyone within the running community saw it and they thought, wow, that's phenomenal, because they had a sense of the UTMB and also then the fact that you were breastfeeding going around. But it kind of really just it transcended running way and just went into the world of, and you know, the media picked up on it, and you sort of were this sort of suddenly a sort of figurehead of this is 100% doable, like this should be the norm in that sort of way. Was that sort of, that must have been a bit of a whirlwind, or certainly like you thought, oh, I'm just going to do this big race that I want to do, and if I have to breastfeed and express all the way around, then I will. And then all of a sudden it's like Sophie Powers, female national radio, and all this sort of stuff. So what was that like?
It was pretty crazy, because I hadn't told anyone I was doing it, really. The first thing I realized when the media picked up on it was when my kind of sister-in-law kind of messaged me, and I wasn't on Instagram, and she's like, what are your boobs doing on my Instagram? And I think kind of Women's Health, she'd be looking at the Women's Health account, and no, I hadn't told them. I mean, it was, why would I tell people? This was my dream, and my family said, we're going to go after this goal and see where we get to. And it wasn't like, I'm going to finish this race. It was going to be, you know, we're going to go and have a family holiday and experience it. And Chamonix at that time of year, so many friends who are ultra runners are there. We wanted to catch up with everyone with our new baby. So the media was crazy, but I realized kind of pretty quickly that this is not an ultra running story. It's not a running story. It's about kind of what women kind of do after childbirth, and that, you know, with the right support, kind of we can still achieve our goals. And many women give them up because being a new mum is so difficult, and there's so much kind of pressure in society to put our family first. But actually, when we put our own kind of health first, and we're stronger as women, you know, we can be stronger for our families and have a much more kind of fulfilling life, and be better role models. And especially now I have a daughter, my first two sons, I've got a daughter. It's so important for me to show her that I'm active and I'm fit and I'm setting myself goals and I'm achieving them. So I think that's where the media picked up on it. But I think we also got to talk about a lot of barriers that women face to returning to fitness. And we all want to see more women on the start line. And I think we're moving to where there's lots of images of pregnant women and women with children exercising, which is amazing. But we don't talk about the fact that kind of one in three women leak after having kind of a baby, more than half of runners do. And we need to give them that support to run again and to run again safely. And so I think it unearthed a lot of the previously taboo subjects, which we really need to address if we're going to get more women active. And so I joined the Board of Women in Sport as a trustee, and I'm working with them to really kind of do everything we can to support women and girls of all ages to be more active, whether it's running or anything else they enjoy.
It's so inspiring, I think, hearing you talk about kind of the importance of an active pregnancy and not being worried about getting your fitness back after birth. And do you think being kind of having an active pregnancy better prepares you for the kind of physical job that it must be being a new parent, or does it make the birth less intimidating? And what does it mean to you?
I think, I mean, birth is definitely pregnancy is an ultra marathon. It's a very long ultra marathon. Birth is like kind of, birth is like kind of, you get to the end of the race and someone tells you there's like a 500 meter, like uphill rock scramble, and you've got to get through it. I think running does kind of prepare you, because it gets hard and you know that you've done it before. Like you're at a marathon, you're at the 20 mile point or a 10K, and you've got kind of around the corner and down the hill to get there. And you're just better prepared to kind of go through that, knowing that it's going to be over soon and you're going to reach the finish line. So I think running really kind of racing especially can help to prepare you. But yeah, I mean, being a mum's really physical. I mean, not just running down after my kids. So my six-year-old, because I can't run fast down a hill yet, he's quicker than me down a hill, which is really annoying. And I'm going to take him out soon. He still thinks he's quicker. He's doing mile time trials for this half-term challenge. I'm trying to keep up with him. But it's also, you're carrying around a kettlebell all the time at like awkward angles, breastfeeding. So strength is so important. And just being able to be out with your kids is so important. So being active, just, it helps you sleep better. It helps you recover better. And we should be making sure we're giving women all the encouragement to be active. So saying, you know, it is good for you, is good for the baby, but all of that support and doing it safely, so that we don't have problems down the line and we can kind of have an active life after we become mothers.
I think we're going to have to get into the real issue around post-birth. And I think that the major, but I mean, I'm talking from experience of talking to my partner after two children, is the pelvic floor. And I think, Sophie, you've been doing a lot of work on this, and certainly with your physio. So can we just sort of dive, not literally into the pelvic floor, but let's just talk about the pelvic floor for a bit.
So kind of pelvic floor is kind of a band of muscle that kind of supports your undercarriage. And when you have a baby, it becomes weakened. And actually for many people kind of even before that. And that means you need to strengthen it, just like you would have to strengthen any other muscle. And if you don't, then you end up kind of leaking urine or having kind of further difficulties. And it's a case of kind of over half of women, kind of my physio estimates, would leak when they run, but you can strengthen it. And you can do this at any point during your life. But it's a bit embarrassing. So we don't talk about it. And kind of 4 in 10 women that have a problem wouldn't even mention it to a medical professional. And the current setup after you have a baby, you have a 6-week check that's kind of quite basic. And you get a leaflet on, do your pelvic floor exercises. But we don't even know often if we're doing them right, and you need the right cues and you need that checked. So we need more female health physios and pelvic health physios. I'd absolutely encourage every woman runner, no matter where they are, to go to one and see where they are. Make sure they're doing the exercises properly. Make sure they're strengthening themselves so kind of they can run in life as long as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is the sort of certainly from speaking to female runners and, you know, my own personal experience with my partner, is that it's not something that's readily sort of given to women after childbirth. There's very little aftercare in that regards, especially as a runner. And I think that's where there's a sort of standardized, you're a woman and you've had a baby, and then there's, you're a woman who's had a baby who also runs, and that extra level just doesn't ever get seen to.
If we tore our hamstring,
yeah,
we would go and see a physio. If we had a traumatic kind of fall and tumble down the trail, we would go and see a specialist physio and get ourselves fixed as runners. Childbirth is a traumatic event for our body, not in terms of kind of is the worst thing to happen. It's the most amazing thing, but yeah, it is to our body, getting a baby out, whichever way it comes out. You know, you need to heal, and we need that specialist care. So as women, we need to think of ourselves as an athlete. And this is, even though most women have babies, we need to kind of get that treated. And the NHS doesn't have enough specialists. And sadly, the option for most women is to go private. There's 700,000 births a year and only 800 registered kind of pelvic health physiotherapists. And we need to get far more funding, because it's important that women are active, not just runners, but just being able to run across the road, run after our kids, do exercise classes throughout our life. The return on the investment to the NHS of having a woman being active through her whole life from just giving them a few physio appointments must be massive.
If a woman's listening to this and she thinks, oh, that is me, and I'm a bit embarrassed and I've not actually gone to my GP or even talked to my running mates about this, what would you encourage them to do? Is there help talking to the GP, if, you know, is that a good place to start, or would you go down a private route and get seen by someone kind of sooner rather than later?
And I think we have to kind of think that private is expensive. So kind of you'd be looking at kind of £60 around to see a pelvic health physiotherapist, and that's out of the reach for some women. Your GP should be able to refer you. There are probably waiting lists. There's something called a mummy MOT, which is kind of after having a baby at any point, just giving an assessment. And I'd say if you would go to see a physio to treat your hamstring injury, go to a pelvic health physio. And often they're kind of cross-trained. So my physio, Emma Brockwell, used to be a sports physio, and she's actually addressing my hamstring injury at the same time, and different ways that I carry my baby in the wrong way has actually kind of tweaked me in different ways for my running. So find one who's a runner, even, that really understands kind of what you want to do. It should be available on the NHS. It should be available, no waiting list. It's not. And that's one of the issues. There are lots of online support now on Instagram, some brilliant physios to follow that do give lots of tips. But there's no real substitute for going to see someone and having a proper kind of in-person checkup, which are permitted at the moment.
I think it was you mentioned that Emma, your physio, she worked on the guidelines, right? That you mentioned, returning to running guidelines. So we'll put a link in the description of the podcast for anyone who wants to and needs to read those, so that you know they can have a look there. But I think, you know, a very important subject that needed discussing, I think.
Thank you so much for coming on the Run As Well podcast and talking about active pregnancies and all the important messages around that. Absolutely great to chat with you.
Thank you for having me.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Run As Well podcast. A big thanks to our guest, Sophie Power, and to you, of course, for listening.
Do you like magazines? Would you like them to arrive at your door? Subscribe to Runners World magazine today to get 3 issues for only 5 English pounds, or Scottish pounds, depends. Visit hearstmagazines.co.uk/runnersworldpodcast to get this exclusive listener offer.
The Runners World podcast is available on Acast, iTunes, and all of your favourite podcast apps. Just search Runners World UK and click subscribe. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.